Okay, so with the meditation, the path of meditation, what are we aiming for? What is it we're actually after? And as you all know, you know, meditation has many sort of useful parameters to it. You can use it for all sorts of different things, for different emotional experiences, for physical ailments in the body. Even some people would say, like, even with mental health issues, some people can get benefit, you know, if you do meditation, say in the right way. For example, if a person would, you know, suffering from, could be anything. I mean, anxiety seems to come up with a number of people, but you can actually support yourself emotionally by radiating some compassion towards oneself. You know, may I be free from anxiety, fear, and worry. So you actually generate a supporting feeling, which balances, counteracts, and balances the difficult states that we go through in life. So you know, no matter what people experience, you know, people can experience 1,001 different emotions and moods, but you can generate, say, corresponding feelings to bring the mind into a more sense of balance. So as we develop, say, the meditation over time, say over the months, you know, the months and years, you know, people tend to see, you know, they usually see the results quite clearly, you know, quite clearly within themselves, you know, after, say, 4 weeks or so from that point on. And because meditation itself, it's something which goes, it's not just like a surface level principle, it's something which goes through you, you know, right through your personality, and affects many, many areas of your life. So, you know, from this very, very simple practice that, you know, you'll be able to see so many benefits, like over time. And the kind of benefits that you get will, you know, can actually be more beneficial than, say, pharmaceutical drugs. Sometimes even not necessarily downplaying, say, talk therapy or any kind of counselling, because it all has its a certain place or and value, you know, to people who are dealing with modern life, dealing with the stress and the responsibilities and duties, you know, within their work and their families, you know, their external lives. So you know, every single one of us, within our own, you know, we all have different, you know, different personal karma, you know, different ways we react to other people and circumstances. But, you know, when you look at the ups and downs of life, that the vast majority of us can definitely benefit from that stability, both in mental and emotional stability, because, you know, who wants to be like going up and down like a yo-yo, you know, on a day-to-day basis through the course of their life. You know, it's definitely much better to be centered and grounded and to be emotionally stable and to go from, you know, from high to low according to circumstances. You know, it's something which is quite sort of like tiring, it wears people out, you know, going up and down like a yo-yo emotionally, you know, going through all these different moods, you know, which it's like draw energy, it draws energy and focus from the mind. So as we, you know, as you develop this path, I mean, many traditions have their own certain style of meditation, but the Buddha, you know, the Buddha basically was, say, like the grand master of all styles. You know, he could understand the path of meditation all the way to the end, you know, all, you know, the end of karma, rebirth, the end of the path, and that brings the human beings or any beings experience in samsara to a complete end, you know, because you know, with the path, once you understand exactly, you know, that the whole, you know, just the complete nature of mind and body and why you are here in this universe of ours, you know, you understand all those very deep, deep insights which come up with the realization of the path, then there's no reason for you to keep coming back over and over again and re-experiencing the lessons of life. Because, you know, the Buddha himself said that all modes of existence are unsatisfactory compared to the Nibbana element, which is the ultimate peace, the ultimate bliss. And so, you know, there's people who've realized the Buddha's Dhamma. You know, they know what's actually important and what's may not be so useful as far as your time and your energy is concerned. Because, I mean, every single one of you, even you know, even if people only have time to meditate for 5 minutes a day, you know, it has a lot of value. And you can easily see a change in people over, say, like 30 days, 4 weeks without difficulty. So just give me a minute and we'll just think of a certain style that we can do. This is a slightly, I'll do this a slightly different slant, but this is more like a technique I want you to experiment with. It's just a tool. It's not like a mindset. I mean, I've done this. We'll only just do this for a couple of minutes, so you can get a feel for it. It's based in a recollection of say death, recollection of death to a degree, but it's not something which will make you depressed or unhappy. You know, I've done this for hours every day. You know. For easily 4 or 5 days running, but when you do it just in very small amounts, you can get that initial tranquility very, very quickly. Because the reason why it works so well of all meditation techniques, this one gets people, the vast majority of people, peaceful faster than any other technique you will see. Because essentially the recollection of death. That it's a quite a firm meditation, but the whole principle with the death principle is it brings an end to all states, you know, all states of say being in this life. Everything comes to an end at the point of death, just in that current lifetime. So you just use it as a tool. It's a very, very like calming meditation. There's a very senior monk in Canberra, just as a sidetrack, senior monk in Canberra who'd been, I think, in robes for at least, say, 35 years, and the meditation hadn't really gone very far. A meditation master came from Thailand and was in Canberra at the time, and he recommended that he do. He said, when everything fails, when you've been meditating for years and years and years, even with the monks and nuns, and you still don't get results, you do the recollection of death, because it has the greatest ability to get the mind peaceful and tranquil. And with that kind of meditation, that you get this, a kind of emotion, a firmness of mind, like an emotional stability, which comes with that a kind of practice. But you just use it as a tool in very small degrees. So what we'll do is with this particular session, so with the beginner's instructions, if you can just sit comfortably with your back straight, just a head upright and relaxed, just nothing tied around the waist, wrists, around the throat. Make sure you can breathe into the full chest, and I just want you to use this very simple mantra. So as we, in the beginning, we'll just do this just for a couple, say 5 minutes, so you can really get a feel for it and see what the effect is. We'll just do it for 5 minutes only. I want you to use this very, very simple mantra, death is near. So as you breathe in and out, as you're breathing out, you breathe out, say, death. And then breathing in, leave a space, breathing out is near. Breathing in, breathing out, death. Breathing in, breathing out is near. And this is very, very good for samatha meditation. So we'll just do that for 5 minutes only, and then we'll move to the to the breathing meditation. As we develop this meditation, just try to keep yourself as physically and emotionally relaxed as possible.
So if you feel a bit sleepy or drowsy, take slow, deep breaths right into the base of the abdomen. Now we're going to move across to the breathing meditation. So we'll use a sharp but comfortable focus. So I want you to focus on the feelings around the mouth, which tends to be quite clear, lots of nerve endings in the mouth. So all those sensations, you focus on that area and you'll feel the breathing on the edge. But it will help to ground you, a sharp but comfortable focus, and we'll focus on that area for the remainder of this session. of this point in the meditation, if you are thinking a little bit too much, don't push those thoughts away or grab hold. Just try to maintain a fairly neutral kind of attitude to the thoughts which come and go. still find the mind is a little bit busy, you need to, say, do some contemplation, try to undo some insight practice, try to understand those thoughts and feelings which are, say, obstructing the peacefulness. All of us, you know, tend to think too much, but you need to understand why you think and feel the way you do. It's very difficult to let go of anything if you don't really understand oneself, you know, the process, what's actually happening from start to finish. So if you have a particular mood, a particular, like, attachments, feelings which are obstructing the peacefulness of the mind, you need to, say, look at those quite closely, try to understand, you know, just stop and reflect for at least 20 to 30 seconds and try to understand that experience completely, because otherwise it's very difficult to let go of anything if you don't really understand exactly why you think and feel the way you do. your breathing in and out. Try to physically relax the breath as much as possible. So we're coming towards the end of the meditation. Just see if you can see any change in the peacefulness of the mind. And I'll ring the gong 3 times. You can open your eyes when you're ready. Question from Germany. I can only meditate when I lie down due to chronic pain. When I lie down, I sometimes struggle with sleepiness. How do I reach deep stillness while enduring chronic pain and feeling sleepy? So what I would tend to do is... Right, so this person's got chronic pain and they have to lie down. It's not like you can sit in maybe a nice comfortable chair. So what I would do, so for example, if I was really interested in meditation but constantly disturbed by long-term pain, but you've got sleepiness as well, you've got an element of sleepiness. What I would tend to do, just a thought which came up, was have a very, very strong cup of tea, not coffee. Coffee tends to make the mind think too much. With tea, strong tea, you get a stimulation effect without too much cerebral activity. So before you say lie down, a cup of tea, like 2 tea bags, like really strong tea with milk, and say 1 spoon of sugar, not too much sugar, and then lay down on your side and start practicing. And if you still feel like maybe a little bit sleepy, you can meditate with your eyes open. And also, people need to breathe. Something which happens with some practitioners is because they're getting over peaceful, over tranquil, they forget to breathe deeply. So take slow, deep breaths. And even after all that, if you still feel sleepy, you can do things like the perception of light. You can visualize, say, like a sun or a moon inside one's mind, or say, like the white color on a wall, because what happens is when you visualize any kind of light, white light in the mind, it brightens the mind, energizes the mind to a degree. And people who do this kind of practice a lot, they find that there's more mental alertness during the day. They tend to sleep less. I know a monk in Sri Lanka who did the light casino, a light, like which resembles the full moon in the mind. He'd do that for hours on end, and he was able to get his sleep, his sleep down to about 4 hours every 24 on a regular basis. So it's something you can develop. If some people may not have very, very strong visualization, but it's worth developing. Even if you can only sustain it for like 5 minutes right at the beginning of one's practice. And what else could one do? Make sure, like, say for example, the room that where you lie in the room, the lights are bright, not dark, and little things like, say for example, if somebody is they have trouble with the sleepiness. I mean, you can do things like you can be physically comfortable, but if you make the body say like too warm, if you pull a couple of rugs or blankets over you when you're lying on the floor, it's okay. But if some people are especially too warm, I've noticed that myself, the body tends to drop off to sleep more easily. But if you're just a little bit, if the body's just a little bit cool, not cold, but just a little bit cool, it maintains, alertness. And there was an example where one particular lady who was, she was well known for the quality of her
like her dinner parties, if she, one of these high-profile socialite people. And what she would do was, before like her first guest arrived, she'd have all the windows open in the house, and then as soon as the just before the first guest arrived, then she would close all the windows. So the house itself was full of the oxygen level, oxygen saturation level was much higher, and the air was like slightly cool, more energized. And so, for example, the people who attended the dinner party, they tended to be like more alert, you know, less sluggish. You know, you've got more oxygen, it's slightly cold, and you'll notice that, you know, when people are really warm, or if the temperatures are very warm, they start to get sluggish. Question from New Zealand. Arising thoughts during meditation are causing agitation. How do I deal with that? So thoughts giving rise to agitation. So what I always tend to do is, because most of us, we tend to do focus on samadhi meditation, on the peaceful meditations, but, you know, you can't neglect your insight, your contemplation practice, because samadhi in itself, you know, you can only go so far with samadhi, and people always get blocked. If you've got mastery of samadhi, mastery of jhanas, you can just go all the way into a very, very deep, one-pointed state within the mind. But the vast majority of people, you'll get, say, for example, even if you're not particularly cerebral, intellectual, you don't think a lot, eventually you'll read, you know, even after, who knows, could be days, could be a week or so, something's going to come up, and it's going to, essentially, it's going to block you. There's going to be an obstruction, and you have to come to an understanding of that state, those thoughts, those feelings, those moods. Because if you don't, they can be with you for years on end. Because the whole purpose of insight, the most, it's all, you know, it's good to get peaceful, to be calm, peaceful, relaxed, you know, this and that. But, you know, the wisdom practice, reflection, investigation, absolute minimum has 2 to 2.5 times the tranquility power of just samadhi alone. Everyone gets blocked with samadhi. So for example, you're the kind of person who's really attached to peacefulness. You don't like to think or contemplate too much. Your practice tends to slow down. You've got to keep that balance. Something that people can do is that state, you know, agitation. I mean, you know, you need to, you know, just stop, you know, stop for whatever, you know, at least 20, 30 seconds. And you know, why are you agitated with what and where and who with? For what reason, you know? If I'm agitated, and I don't even understand why I'm agitated, I mean, it's not going to stop. You know, it's going to just it could keep going on for years. So, you know, the whole practice, the whole purpose of the path, the highest principle in the path is insight, wisdom. So all your foundation principles, your morality, meditation, development of wisdom. It's all geared to coming to a deeper understanding of oneself, the mind, the body, the universe, understand your place in the universe. So, you know, as you're investigating, so for example, you have agitation, you're investigating agitation, just look how the mind actually responds to the way you approach that particular experience. You know, everyone gets more skillful over time. You know, there's more than one way to sort of skin a cat, as they say. So, you know, you can approach vipassana from a number of, say, angles. And, you know, over time you get more sharp, more skilled, you develop more ability to understand and approach personal experiences from, say, different angles, and you'll tend to get good results. So, you know, if you investigate mind states, emotional states, and you've been doing that for like 3 months, 6 months, 12 months, you'll find that you actually become more skillful. You catch the states much earlier. It's good to get them as soon as an obstruction comes up, problem comes up. You really need to just get right on it straight away. Don't let it linger. Don't let it go on for 20, 30 minutes plus. As soon as you see something comes up which is going to block you, you start investigating right there. Because that's, that whatever it is, that, that particular mood or that particular mind state, it's telling you, you know, like, you have to give me attention. You have to come to an understanding of what's happening here. Otherwise, I'll just keep coming back again and again and again until you actually, you know, really focus and pay attention and develop some insight. So, you know, people think, oh, you know, they don't. Sometimes people don't like to look at their stuff. They don't like to look at their difficulties, their problems in life. But, you know, you really don't have any choice at all. And that's where the success in the practice comes in. So an easy way to deal with it is you do your samatha meditation, you do the breathing meditation, walking mantra, you do it for 5 minutes, and then you switch to insight. You investigate whatever is obvious in the mind, whatever is most prominent, and then after you've finished that investigation, you go back to samadhi, to insight, to tranquility meditation, and so back and forth, 5 minutes of tranquility, and then investigation, and then back and forth. So, you know, if you want to see good results, sharpen the skills on both sides. People who do that approach always get better samadhi at the end of 30 minutes or an hour, because your faculties are in balance. You know, but people can have the jhanas. You know, people can have the jhanas for lifetimes, and you know, you get incredible bliss, tranquility, peacefulness, you know, and whatnot. The characteristics that you get with full samadhi, but it's not. It only takes you that far. That's all. That's as far as it takes you. It'll take you to rebirth in the Brahmaloka realms, which are connected, you know, with levels of the jhanas. You know, either beginning, intermediate, mastery of any particular jhana, you'll be reborn in that particular Brahma world, which is connected with that. But the key principle is investigation, understanding. And then you watch the mind. As you investigate, watch how the mind responds to the way you approach one's personal stuff. Sometimes when meditating, a thought or idea comes into my head and I become excited and want to act on it. How do I remain still and meditate when I am feeling bored? What I would tend to do, right, so I put myself in this situation, thought comes in, an idea comes in. I don't get excited that much, but I want to act on it. And how do I remain still and meditate when I'm feeling bored? So an excitable thought, you're bored, an excitable thought comes up, distracts you, takes your attention away. You know, especially these days, people can get bored so easily. You take their smartphone away for 5 minutes, they're bored. But what I would do, is, if that was my experience, you know, I mean, look right into it. Why am I bored? For what reason? Why? You know, where? What? You know, for, under what conditions? You know, really come to an understanding of boredom. The forest masters will tell you this. Don't just let these like little things escape you. You know, because this is where you'll get stuck. You know, if boredom is your thing, you know, you really need to come to a really full understanding of that to be released from it. But or you can do things like you can watch, you know, actually watch the thinking process, and see and what happens as you do that, you see how thoughts and memories connect with each other, and you'll see patterns of thought, and you'll see the way thoughts generate feelings, which generate thoughts. So you know, you can, you know, as you just watch passively, watch the thinking process in the mind, and then you may develop a degree of insight there. There's a couple of ways to do it. You can just watch thinking, just as an observer, just watch it and learn. Or you can do like you can label thoughts, you know, people, places, moods, feelings, you know, exactly what it is. You put a label on it, and then you start to like, you can identify what's happening there. Labeling. So the whole business. And so for example, as well, there's certain meditation techniques which are good for boredom. You know, when you close your eyes and you see that dark colour in the mind, that's a very, very neutral object. So you find a reasonably dark room, you turn the lights off, reasonably dark room, you focus on that dark colour with your eyes closed. And that's a really good meditation technique, because it draws your attention away from thoughts, from feelings, from ideas. And even when people are thoroughly bored and they do that kind of meditation, you might find that actually quite enjoyable in a sense, because it's so neutral and it draws your attention away from everything. So I know people can get quite peaceful with that particular approach. And sometimes if people, you know, if people are really, say, really excitable, they can do things like, you know, do the say walking meditation, where you're generating more energy, you're focusing on the physical body, so drawing your attention away from the brain from cerebral activity, placing one's attention on the feet, and because you're walking and you're generating energy and you're putting that energy into focusing on the very bottom part of the body, well away from the top section of the physical body, that it can be useful in that sense. What else? Little things like another little trick as well is for people who maybe have a little bit of difficulty with samadhi practice, with tranquility practice, that you can do things like get these little mantras from the internet, like the Om Mani Padme Hum, these very could be anything, any of these sing-songy mantras that you get from the Tibetan Chinese, especially Tibetan Chinese tradition, Mahayana, or anywhere else, Sanskrit, Hindu, Theravadan, you know, and you listen to the, say for example, you could listen to the mantra with your iPod or your earphones for, say, at least 5 minutes and really get it going, and it'll just spin and spin and spin. Once you get that going, and once you get a grip on that, once you get a handle on that, you know, it can just spin for absolutely hours and hours on end. So people who might have a little bit of difficulty with samatha meditation, you know, you can use that approach, because you'll find that, you know, instead of thinking about, you know, like 101 things over the course of, you know, it could be easily 30 minutes or whatever, it's better to have like a mantra just constantly just spinning in the mind, and you'll find that when you actually go to meditate, you can settle much more quickly, because you're keeping the mind within a boundary. You're not allowing the mind to go right around the world and back. You know, with this kind of mantra formulations that your attention is just fixed. It's just locked in to that, just that single mantra repeatedly. I know monks in Thailand who do that, and it works. It can actually work quite well if people are very, very busy and they struggle with meditation. Okay, were there any other questions at all? This gentleman at the back.
Ajahn, can you hear me, please?
Yep.
Ajahn, like many people, I lead a busy professional life. On the way to the temple every Saturday, my mind is a plethora of ideas, the monkey mind. After an hour of guided meditation, sometimes I manage to get a quiet mind, a peaceful mind. I want it to endure as long as possible. And therefore, for me, questions at the end of the meditation, that's the last thing I personally need. What might be, for me, this is personally, questions after the monk gives a presentation, but before the meditation starts, because at that point my mind is still a little bit active. That might sound rather selfish, but I'm just explaining from my point of view. After invested an hour of guided meditation, I want the quiet mind to endure, not the monkey mind of questions, answers, thoughts, etc., etc. So I respectfully just give that to you for possible consideration. Thank you.
Yeah, and I usually find that with the people, they don't really know where they're at until they've actually done a session. So you know, like when people sit or walk, and then they see stuff come up, and then they just sort of check in with myself or whoever's leading, the group. But some people they really have nothing to work on at the beginning. You know, maybe at the beginning of a session. But with each individual, no matter where people are at, you know, if there's some kind of hindrance, if there's some kind of emotion which is obstructing, it could be anything, a thought, idea, a mood. You know, the person concerned has to come to an understanding of that, because it won't stop. You know, there might be certain things which annoy me. If somebody's going on in my face, or there's something heavy going on and it doesn't stop, and somebody starts to really annoy me, I don't just wait for it to pass. I mean, I just get on it straight away, and I can wrap it up. Usually wrap it up pretty quick. You know, as soon as you see it comes up, you start contemplating, and then you'll find over time, over days or weeks, then you slowly become free of that thing. I mean, I can have 1,001 opinions on almost anything whatsoever, but if it's not really, if it doesn't, it's not useful, doesn't have any real value, I'm just wasting my time with it. So, if you find that it's all with the thinking, you know, the monkey mind. I mean, even for example, when I do meditation groups, some people, you know, they don't like any kind of mantra format. They don't want any kind of reflection. You know, just leave me alone. I just want to get peaceful. But, you know, I know for a fact it's not going to stay that way, and it's the wrong approach. You know, even as you're meditating, I mean, I don't waste my time. If I'm not peaceful in 5 minutes, I go straight to investigation, and I get results straight away, because I've been doing this a long time. And you'll find the quality, when you just even going back and forth, 5 minutes of peaceful meditation, reasonably peaceful, and then to investigation, just back and forth, you'll find the quality of the meditation would be easily twice as good. Because you develop, as soon as you've got the samadhi there, the focus there, and you investigate right there. You know, even though Achan Chah had incredible meditation from Northeast Thailand, had incredible meditation, he would admonish his monks tell them off if they got lost, you know, if they would get less lost in samadhi practice and they were neglecting their wisdom. I mean, that would just a sidetrack. I mean, they had all sorts of work projects, this and that going on, and the monks would say, like, what are we doing with these projects? We're supposed to here to meditate, to get enlightened, and you've got us working all day for weeks on end. But what he would do, there are certain things which can't be avoided, especially with new communities which are being developed. But he would constantly put emphasis on, insight and wisdom over and over and over again, a thousand times, because that's where the key is. Samadhi just gets you peaceful, but that's it. It has additional benefits, but to a small degree. But insight has far more benefits, several times more benefits. And if you really want to make progress on the path and even deepen samadhi, no one gets deep samadhi without really firm wisdom. No one, because the two go together. They've got to be balanced. The faculties have got to be like very much on the same level. Okay, we're all done.